Told you he was a crook.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Dalton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Right, well, this week we're going to talk about a FIFA tournament.
Yeah.
A FIFA international tournament that will sort of grip the world. Mm. They always do, don't they?
They do.
No, this is a full competition. It's for full senior players, no one's picked it up in this country for the TV rights.
Not as of yet, no.
So you can't watch it in this country?
Not at the moment.
Well, legally.
Well, you might be able to pick it up through legal online channels, but
yes.
You can't turn on the telly, no matter what package you've got in this country, no matter what legal package you've got in this country, and turn it on. I am, of course, listeners, talking about the FIFA World Club Cup, which starts on Thursday of this week, Thursday the 10th of December.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It does. There was the playoff round between Auckland and Hiroshima.
Auckland?
Yes,
that's right. Because Auckland, being the team from Oceania, have to have the hardest trip to actually win it, don't they?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, they got not exactly the longest trip, although it wouldn't surprise me if it was, but certainly it's the toughest experience for them because they have to go all the way to Japan, and then they, as the least fancied team, and then they really, you know, they could easily just turn up, play a game, and then go home. I mean, they may only participate for one match. I mean, I believe that Auckland actually did quite well in one World Club Cup, but I think it's reasonable to assume that the Oceanian champions, by and large, would be expected to go home early, and it wouldn't be a surprise at all. Not that we make predictions on the Sound of Football, but it wouldn't be a surprise if they were to be beaten by the newly crowned J-League champions.
That's one of the reasons why Oceania put forward a proposal to change the format of the competition.
They have indeed, yes.
So it's a round robin, so everyone gets to play at least two games, which was not adopted.
No, it wasn't. They've chosen to stick with this rather unsatisfactory system of having a fifth and sixth place playoff, which means that the team that loses in the original game only has to play, goes all the way to Japan to play one game.
Mm.
Yeah. It is, and I suppose this is part of the reason why, or is this part of the reason why it just hasn't captured the public imagination, or at least not here anyway.
It's not a popular tournament, generally speaking, in Europe. I don't think the fact that certainly in the UK, the lack of participation of English clubs won't help. England's clubs have participated fairly recently. Liverpool, of course, were in it. Chelsea have participated.
Yeah.
But, of course, Manchester United participated in the 1999 one, which was a 12-team tournament. And that was, of course, shrouded in controversy because that was the one in which they ducked out of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And this was all because it was considered to be politic to enter the Club World Cup because they were under the impression that this would go their way when bidding for the 2006 World Cup, to host the 2006 World Cup.
This was the FA, not Man U. Yeah.
So the FA...
Yeah.
And I'm sure probably I'm almost certain with some degree of government influence persuaded Manchester United to pull out of the FA Cup, an extremely controversial decision and very unpopular decision as well, to play in this tournament. I don't remember how they did, but they did badly. It was in it was in Brazil, and I believe that Vasco da Gama won that tournament.
It was an all-Brazil final.
It was indeed an all-Brazil final, wasn't it? Yeah, and that was covered over here, but subsequently we don't get it much. Eurosport might pick it up towards the end, sort of like, and they have in the past.
Mm.
They picked it up towards the end. I believe the good people of Channel 5 have covered it. Last time Manchester United were in it, but generally speaking, no.
Yeah.
Europe-wide, in fact, it tends not to be that popular. It can be. But not that it's in South America where it's popular and considered to be very important. Its forerunner was the Intercontinental Championship, which was just a one one-off game, or was it a two-legged game?
No, it was a one-off
game between the South American, the CONMEBOL champions, so the Libertadores winners, and the European Cup winners. And it was keenly contested by South Americans, because they were very keen to prove their mettle against the richer and some say more glamorous European leagues. And that still continues. And you know, but having said that, some South American teams have struggled in this tournament. They got knocked out. It was Atletico Mineiro last season got knocked out. Or, no, 2013 it was. They got knocked out by Raja Casablanca, the host, who ended up playing Bayern Munich in the final. So that was a and they were hosting. Yeah, so that was a good tournament, as it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't win, but you know, it was still a good tournament. So
yeah, well, for a tournament that UEFA teams don't take seriously. I mean, obviously there's a hell of a lot of money with the European champions going over there, because the UEFA teams have won, I think, 7 of the last 8 finals. So things are going pretty well as far as they're concerned, aren't they?
Is there a big purse for winning?
I don't know what the purse is, but it is. I would imagine it's substantial.
I actually think it's substantial for clubs that aren't from UEFA. If you're Barcelona, I don't think it's probably going to be substantial, is it? I think it is more of the case of, like, you are obliged to do this.
It's in the millions, though.
Yeah.
I believe you win millions of somethings, whether
quid.
It be US dollars or you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not to be sniffed at.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, like, you know, showing up at a prestige FIFA event, there's bound to be a few millions sloshing around somewhere.
Well, you might just sit down on a sofa and just find yourself at a little envelope there.
You might do. You might have a thing around it saying 4 Caribbean TV rights around it.
It's interesting because the idea of the Club World Cup was conceived in part by Silvio Berlusconi. It was his idea.
Well, this can only go one way.
It was ratified, so to speak, if indeed anything is ratified in this place. It was ratified in 1993 at a FIFA Congress in Las Vegas. I mean, 100 years from now, people will look back on these times and they'll say, right, so this thing was ratified in 1993, and it's taken you this long to figure out that these guys were bent. You know?
Yeah, Silvio Berlusconi's bunga bunga party.
I'm not suggesting Silvio Berlusconi is bent, per se.
No, but I
am saying that many people feel he's bent, yeah. and the Italian, specifically the Italian judiciary, who know more about it than me.
I think really, obviously, with lack of British participation, or let's say English participation in the tournament, a tournament's never going to do well over here, is it really? I mean we do bad enough with the Europa League, and we do have teams in it. So, I mean, is there a place for an international club tournament that will capture the imagination, or will be seen as something other than just a jolly out in the middle of December?
There should be. There definitely should be, because it's the... I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't we? Talking about a natural progression from the European game. And there's no reason why the best clubs from each federation, confederation, shouldn't be playing each other in a big spectacle tournament.
Mm.
It's difficult because it's a small tournament with a limited number of teams in it, some of whom you probably won't have heard of, with players that you probably won't have ever seen. And it's 9 hours ahead. and I found out about it today when you said, let's talk about the World Club Cup. And I went, World Club Cup is on.
Is that on? Yeah.
Is that on? And so, you know, it should have everything that you would want to watch in it. But, you know, there's obviously not a lot of razzmatazz about it, which means, I suspect, that there's no money in it. And therefore, if no one's going to make a pretty penny, then they ain't going to push it, are they?
Well, I think it's interesting because the only two countries that went for hosting it were India and Japan, and India pulled out, and so leaving Japan as the only one, and they've hosted it loads of times, and they used to host the Intercontinental Cup pretty much every year as well. So it's obviously got a market in some places, but. Obviously, you know, if you're at the top of the heap looking down, you're probably thinking, yeah, okay, this is something that, you know, is of, you know, amusement value only.
It has its merits, I would imagine, particularly for Barcelona's sort of like international development there. Mm. You know, their marketing overseas.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they obviously, like a lot of modern big clubs, travel all over the world in close season to participate in fairly what really would be regarded as meaningless tournaments, but quite lucrative tournaments, in order to give their fans overseas the opportunity to see them play. And that's what's happening here. Their Japanese fans of Barcelona get the opportunity to watch their team play in a competitive fixture. And it's my reading of the final is that, you know, that game is a competitive fixture. Maybe up to that point it can be tricky. But the UEFA and the CONMEBOL champions don't get involved until the semi-finals anyway, so they're only going to play a maximum of two games themselves.
Mm. Do you think that's part of the problem?
Well, I think yes. I mean, I think that there's a couple of issues with the World Cup Club Cup. The first one is the time in which of the year it's played.
Yeah.
It is not a good time. I don't think it's a particularly good time in South America that much, and it certainly isn't a good time in Europe to be playing. Also, and this is unkind, but I'm going to suggest it anyway, although these are the champions, the confederate champions from around the world, you know, there some confederations are significantly weaker than others.
Mm.
And so they send their champions to turn up. I don't think they necessarily participate, although there is a danger that they won't be able to participate in a way that they would do if it was a more structured international tournament.
Mm.
So Auckland turn up. If they have a bad game, they're going home. So no, if any kind of notion of romance or any kind of mythology or narrative that you can come up with about that is gone pretty quickly. You don't feel, you know, like, come on, I'll go Auckland, you know, because if they blow it in the first game, they go home. If it was a more structured round-robin tournament, which is what Oceania wanted, you might be able to get behind it. I certainly think that if the format were tweaked.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, one thing about the format, though, is that the fact that a lot of the criticism about the Champions League, albeit rather impish criticism, is the fact that it's got so many teams from the same countries and they're not champions that you've got.
Yeah.
And so the champions from other countries end up going out in the preliminary rounds and you know, at least with this tournament,
they're actual champions.
They're actual champions. Well, apart from my host country.
Apart from the host country.
Yeah. But they're national champions.
They are champions. Everybody is champions going into that game. So, yeah. I mean, I don't wish to be unkind, but then it's not. I mean, there is potential for that tournament to do well on the basis of bringing in, you know, champions only. I have often wondered. I know a few weeks ago, we talked about this idea of international club tournaments developing out of the pre-season tournament circuit,
so to speak,
and perhaps emerging a major tournament from that.
Yeah.
I do wonder whether or not the Confederations Cup is something that could be used as a club World Cup rather than using national teams using the... Because the Federations Cup is obviously it's a shakedown for the forthcoming host of the World Cup, so to make sure everything works.
It's pretty much on the same basis, isn't it, really?
Mm. Yeah. And it's a smaller tournament. It's eight teams.
Yeah.
But it tends to, again, it can be get lost a bit because, you know, people don't necessarily go there and take it 100% seriously. But the year before last, the tournament was actually quite exciting, thanks to Tahiti, apart from anything else, who played three games and put in a good show and got everyone a chance to get behind it. And of course, there was the whole Brazilian protests and Brazil having a good show. If you were to convert that to a club World Cup and had eight teams, they wouldn't all necessarily be Confederate champions, but say, you know, but certainly they'd be close enough. You might have, you could have eight teams, you could have a club representing the host, you could have the previous World Club Cup champions, and then you could have the remaining made up of the Confederate champions playing, and then, you know, go on that basis every 4 years, and you might have a tournament to get behind. It might also be something that the clubs would welcome, because they do, some of them strongly resent international football, and I genuinely think some of them resent the World Cup because they know it just throws open the doors and just makes so much money. And I think that clubs can sometimes resent that because they don't feel as if they're getting a big enough slice of the pie, and this might placate some of them.
I think certainly it's engineered into the DNA of this tournament, the fact that the weaker team is almost forced out straight away. Auckland would have to turn up and be outstanding to get a game against... they'd have to be outstanding twice to get a game against Barcelona or River Plate. And I think... I would watch Barcelona against Auckland. I think that'd be brilliant because the chance. I mean, it's like the FA Cup draw only happened was it yesterday or the day before, and the chance of slip ups in the third round is something we all look forward to.
I know Sunderland going to the Emirates, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a real banana skin for us there. But I think that would make it a little bit more interesting if you had potential banana skins for the big the bigger clubs. But as well as that, I mean, I don't know whether you throw the doors open even further and say, look, we're going to make this a massive tournament across several months like the Champions League is, and it's going to be, you know, a real jet-set tournament, and you're going to have teams jetting everywhere and actually making it something a bit more interesting. You could have a game in Las Vegas, you could have a game in Shanghai, you could have a game in Sunderland, for example, or the real glittering
indeed
cities of the world.
What happens in Sunderland stays in Sunderland. Yeah.
So, but it's only ever going to be a small, insignificant competition that should have more attention, but doesn't get it unless something changes. And I think that you want to make it a world club tournament. It should be massive.
We've touched on it already, haven't we? Where we said that there are teams here that you've probably not heard of outside of pre-season friendly tours, and certainly players who you probably haven't heard of before, which isn't the case anymore with the international team tournaments, where the key players for even the smallest sides are usually playing in a good league somewhere.
We get the chance to see the Mexican champions, America, this time around. And it's likely that there'll be a significant number of players that most people, I would say, in Europe and certainly in the UK, won't be aware of. And they play to a very high standard, the Liga MX. It's a very strong league. It's a very wealthy league. And it's difficult to shift Mexican players away from Mexico because it's just so well paid. And there is an opportunity there to see them, and it usually is a Mexican team that wins the CONCACAF Champions League. The MLS is not quite up to snuff yet.
Yeah. But interestingly, the MLS is obviously a lot more marketable league over
I know,
here.
Yeah, because so, it's English language league and the cultural similarities between the UK and the US. But in fact, there's potential fun there. I mean, if America are playing Guangzhou...
Yeah.
Is that right? They're playing Guangzhou Evergrande in there. I mean, I don't know much about Guangzhou Evergrande apart from the fact that, you know, sometimes it's fun to mention them in a kind of sort of like hipster kind of way. But I don't know much about them. But I mean, assuming that they can get past that, then, you know, they would be into a tasty semi final against, you know, one of the two. Where would they go? They go into, would it be
Barca?
It would be Barca.
I think it's Barca. Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, the Mexican champions against the Spanish champions is a game you'd want to see.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that's a game I'd want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely. I have no doubt that a broadcaster, probably Eurosport, will go yoink and we'll have that because it'll cost next to nothing. But I think, Graham, you're right. If not, then I suspect FIFA will stream it live from their website. They do that with their tournaments in which they don't get a proper deal. Like if, you know, they're under 17s, they're under 20 national World Cups that get sort of like, you know, coverage on Eurosport. They'll also they'll just like stream it live on their website and, you know, perfectly legally. They don't geolock it. So there's a good chance that you will be able to watch that screen. I have no idea what time of the day it's on, mind you. But if it's on during the daytime, then, well.
Yeah, it's a long way ahead.
FIFA commentary as well.
Oh, yes, indeed, which is always
I think that if just going back to what I was saying, my brilliant idea about making it a bigger competition.
Yeah.
If it was like that, and Hiroshima, for example, got to play Barcelona twice in a year.
Yeah.
For example, the chances are that the good players from that area, from Hiroshima in Japan, would probably want to stay there because they know, look, I'm going to be in the limelight, not just in my domestic league, but also in the world league, if you like. And you may find that it helps the game domestically and stops the bleed of players overseas.
Ah, but But would clubs like Barcelona and Man United want that? Because surely they want their local support there to remain for them, not to be divided between them and their local and their local clubs. So like they put a lot of money into these tours to harvest a lot of local support, and all of a sudden you'll say, well, actually no, you've got your local team is now going to compete against these large international large sides like United or Barcelona or Real Madrid.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think if we're using that example, then I would imagine that I mean it would be okay for fans of Barcelona who don't live in Hiroshima to come to Hiroshima to as away fans. Then that might work. I think there's room. I mean, local football, we haven't had a good chat about local football and the merits of local football and the threat that it poses, the international football or clubs from overseas threatening, you know, the integrity of local football. It is something that we should talk about. But, I mean, it is... And, I mean, competitions like this and the ones that we've talked about before can interfere with that. I mean, in the same way that, you know, I guess the Champions League does and coverage of overseas leagues on UK television. You know, you see a lot more kids walking around with shirts from clubs in Spain and, well, it's mostly Spain, let's be honest with you, Real and Barca. You know, these days, you see that now. It's not an uncommon thing. And I mean, a lot of it is just because they've grown up watching Spanish football on Sky, I would imagine. And so this sort of internationalisation of club football, in some respects, is extremely exciting because it feels progressive. But actually, the worry is that it could have a, you know, be to the detriment of local football. And I don't mean local football teams per se, but local football, the actual playing of the games, you know, the health of the sport at a local level, which I would argue is probably really the you need that bedrock underneath the international game in order for it to. In order for it to function and be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, how long has it been now since it's been okay to have second teams?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been wondering about that fairly recently.
Yeah.
Do you have a second team, Jan? Or is it only Sunderland? Well, I suppose Whiteleaf, isn't it, really?
Yeah, Whiteleaf. But do you mean like a proper second team?
Like Crystal Palace and Borussia Dortmund for me. That happened about 10 years ago, I reckon.
Mine is probably Crystal Palace because I've been to see them so many times since I moved to the south.
Right.
So I just have a natural affinity with Palace because I've seen them so many times. And it was quite easy to fall in with Palace because they're kind of on the same roller coaster as Sunderland have been on. And not now, though. They're brilliant now. What's all that about?
Yeah, that won't last, don't worry.
But you know, it's, long answer to your question is Crystal Palace.
Obviously, it goes out the window when they actually play each other, though.
Yeah, of course.
So, then turn
absolutely.
One.
Because I bet that with Arsenal playing Dortmund, and it's like, you know, they're stuffed them. You know,
in the unlikely event that Palace ever played Dortmund, I mean, it would be Palace all the way without any hesitation. You do get the impression of this erosion of the idea that one club and no other, and that's that. And there's plenty of people out there who do feel that way. But you also sense that there's also a feeling that there are people who have, you know, their local team or their national team, and then perhaps they support an international team.
Yeah.
You know, one from another country that they've seen on Sky and they really, really like. I mean, I think Dortmund have picked up a lot of fans, I think, over the last two or three years when Jurgen Klopp was getting it done, and Barca, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, you know, AC Milan, Inter Milan, so lots of AC and Inter Milan, lots of Juve fans from people we know more about our age from the 1990s who watched James Richardson and Football Italia on Channel 4.
Yeah.
Huge cultural impact that show had.
Yes, it did.
You know, and even though Serie A is difficult to watch, there's still quite a market for it. So yeah, I mean, perhaps an international club tournament reflects that change in attitude, that change in culture. And would be welcome, but
they've got a marketing job to do, or a structural job, or both.
They've got loads. They've got to do everything. They've got scheduling. They've got format. They've got marketing. They've got loads of things they need to work out. Yeah,
the work cut out.
And you know, it's being run by FIFA, and they're in meltdown.
This is the thing, because the whole thing about this, it screams that it should be something that hipsters should love. But everything it also says about it says it's everything that the hipster should hate.
Yeah, yeah.
So it really is good for no one, isn't it?
It does come. You do feel as though it's just some colossal FIFA jolly is what you're doing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's like a backdrop to some huge FIFA convention.
But that's because it's got them grubby fingerprints all over it, and so everything that they touch is.
Do you think that it would improve in its standing or in its perception? If FIFA removed its name from the brand,
I think that would help a lot of things.
I think if FIFA removed,
we could be
itself.
Looking for, and obviously I just meant its name, but I mean, surely yes. I mean, it's likely that that's going to happen.
Yeah,
but I wonder whether or not there will presumably be a FIFA after this whole, after the death of FIFA, there'll be a new FIFA, and the likelihood is it will still be called FIFA.
Yeah.
But I wonder to what extent they will brand themselves on some of these competitions now, whether or not maybe they might take a slightly go back and say, well, look, because they'll consider their, sorry for the horrible marketing speak, but it is, shall we say, a toxic brand, FIFA.
Yes.
Mm. And I wonder how many sponsors will say, well, actually, do you know what, we'd rather distance ourselves from you on account of all that criminal stuff that you've been doing.
Yeah.
We don't want to be associated with you. We still want to be associated with your tournament. We still want to sponsor the World Cup,
but
we don't want to have anything to do with you, so we prefer it if you just stayed off the marquee on this occasion.
I was just going to say, does that open the door then for the McDonald's World Cup?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does. Of course, nature abhors a vacuum, and there's always that possibility. And that's the thing that we all have to be mindful of ahead of the big showdown in the new year with FIFA. Is to be careful exactly what we wish for, because I mean, there are some bandits out there who would be happy to come in and make things considerably worse.
Yeah.
So and I'm sure they're quite capable of doing that.
Yeah. Oh yes.
So there needs to be an exit strategy, to speak.
Well, on Monday night in the UK there was a Panorama, which is a current affairs programme that detailed the investigation of Andrew Jennings into FIFA over the many years.
Sir Andrew Jennings, I suspect, fairly soon.
Yes, maybe. But what that was going into was looking into the huge amounts of corruption and bribery that had gone on over the last, how many years? Well, since Avalanche took over, really.
Mm.
The Qatar bid, one of the reported figures there for the amount of money that was put into bribery was $117 million. Now, if holy you've got shit. Those figures going around, how on earth are you going to stop corruption in any form of FIFA? Because it's always going to be there. Mm. It's always going to be, it's just in the nature of it.
We were talking about this in the pub the other day.
We were indeed.
And we said the problem with FIFA is that there's no international regulator to give proper oversight onto FIFA.
Mm. Because the international regulator.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, so there is no way. I mean, the regulator for FIFA would, well, I mean, if it was anyone, it would be the United Nations, which seems something
excessive, isn't it?
A trivial waste of their time. But there's no because they're a transnational body with people everywhere. There's no one who can give them proper oversight and audit them.
Mm. I mean, they're a proper evil organisation. They're transnational. Mm. Their reports are no government, and their headquarters are in Switzerland.
They are indeed.
Luckily, they like to do most of their business in US dollars. So that's why the FBI got involved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you get the impression that might change. So, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to know to come up with a clean FIFA.
Mm.
And you know, I go back to what you were talking about whenever it was. I think it was probably even a couple of years ago, Jan, when you suggested that really, you know, FIFA should only exist as an organising committee, just drawn together ad hoc when it was time to organise a World Cup, and then disbands immediately afterwards, and then reforms to start the next cycle.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, certainly things like introducing limited terms for officials, so you only get maybe one or two terms. Frankly, one term, so you don't get in embedded in long enough to be that corrupt.
Yeah.
But the notion that, I mean, the notion that there'll be no corruption in FIFA is genuinely fanciful.
Mm.
It needs to, there needs to be an entire revolution about the way we run, this game is run.
Mm.
And I don't think anybody has come up with as sophisticated and nuanced approach. Everyone's been too busy exposing FIFA. Nobody's, I think, sat down and come up with a really good model for how to take the game forward and how to run the game at an administrative level, you know, at the global level, and deal with sponsors and organise matches and all of that stuff.
Mm. There's no excuse for what's been going on, but it's difficult because in certain parts of the world, business is done in such ways. If it is, it's done in a very cloak and dagger kind of way. I mean, corruption does exist everywhere, doesn't it?
Everywhere.
But, you know, that organisation obviously is swimming in corruption. So something's got to change. But you're right, Terry. You know, we could hope for change, and then you end up with this beast that you never dreamed of, and it could be really horrible.
It could be worse. I mean,
hopefully, hopefully, all these arrests will put an element of fear amongst people who are operating in there. The fear that you know you will be arrested, you will be put in jail if you are hideously corrupt.
Yes,
But I think,
mind you, there's only been 39 arrests so far. So,
yeah, so there's a ways to go, and there's a lot of these people about, and
and they got away with it for so long.
Yeah, I don't think that it will put people. It will put some people off.
Yeah,
but when the rewards are so great, when you could have tens of millions of pounds in bungs given to you over a few years, you know, when you and the chances are that you probably won't get caught, probably. Some people will take the risk.
Yeah, especially if you can find an offshore account to stash it in, which can't be touched.
Yeah.
If you're given that bung and you're in Switzerland, you could just walk to the nearest bank and just put it in there, and no one will ever know.
We've got to get on this gravy train, haven't we?
Yeah, well, how do we get into
we've
this?
We have said it before, haven't we? I mean, the reality is that, I mean, you'd have to be a saint not to be corrupt if you were a FIFA ex-co member or something like that. I mean, you'd have to be an extremely principled person. It must be so difficult. Because the lines get blurred. I mean, you just after a while, you don't know what corruption is. You don't think, it's not too bad. So if you a little bit of here just for a consideration, where's the harm?
Yeah.
And next thing you know.
Well, on that conspiratorial note, I think it's time to bring this podcast to a close. Don't worry, next week we're going to get all seasonal again.
Yay. Advent calendar.
Advent calendar.
Get in.
We have these little milestone markers throughout the year, just so you know where you are. And I know some people that back these up. You'll be listening to it in the middle of March or something, and you'll be hearing all our Christmas jingles and everything going up in the background. But that's to look forward to. But for this week, it's time to go. So for me, Graham Sibley, from Terry DeFellin, and from Jan Bilton, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Yeah.
That sounds satisfactory.
Most satisfactory.